Hello, hello, recruiters, sourcers, directors, VPs of recruitment, dare I say. Welcome back to what I'm sure will in short order shape up to be another classic installment of your very favorite recruiting podcast. I'm your humble host, Rob Stevenson, tucked away in my makeshift recording studio here in the cozy, most salubrious confines of Hired HQ in San Francisco, California. If this is your first time joining us, here's the deal. Every week, I will be bringing in my favorite people in recruitment, senior tech recruiters, directors of TA, VPs of HR, you name it. I'll get them in here, and they are going to do primarily one thing. Talk talent to me. And today, I have got the goods lined up for all of you out there in podcast land. I want to bring in my guest right off the bat here. She has held senior recruiting roles at companies such as Art.com, Exponential, Salesforce. Recently, she served as the VP of TA at RaiseMe, and now she finds herself as the director of TA at Womply. Kathy Rosvin is her name, and she is sitting right beside me. Kathy, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Rob.
Yeah, I'm so glad you're here. And I'm also really glad that we're starting off our week this way. It's a Tuesday morning here after a long weekend, and we both kind of ignored a bunch of emails and beginning of the week meetings to do this, which is my favorite thing.
So. Which I'm sure will come back to bite us.
Yeah, exactly. We'll pay for it later. But for now, we're just going to enjoy ourselves.
Yeah, it's a great way to start the week.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're probably ignoring even more emails than I am because you recently started at Womply, right?
Correct. I started in Womply in January of 2018.
Okay, so new talent leader at a new company. What are the things you look for right off the bat as you get going?
My only advice to anyone that goes into a new role is to don't go in with any assumptions. When you interview, you're meeting with leaders, you're meeting with your future team, everyone has stories to tell. Your job is to go in there and really be a detective and listen really well. Don't go in there with assumptions that, you know, what you've done in the past is going to work for this particular company. Go in and seek to understand why they have certain things in place. You know, we tend to believe that our way is the best way.
Right.
And what I've learned through my 20 some odd years of experience is that assumption is not a good thing to have. It's always good to go in with a clean slate, seek to understand, have conversations with the key stakeholders, have conversations with your team, understand both sides of the story, and then unravel the pieces and put it together and see what's the reality of the situation and where you can make the most impact. So that's what I've done.
When you say key stakeholders, do you primarily mean the hiring managers?
You've got multiple key stakeholders. You have your hiring managers. You have the leaders of the company. You have your team. You have your partners. HR is a huge partner to recruitment and talent. You know, we bring them in and then HR takes over and makes sure that their experience is good. If
right.
only one part of the system is working and the other part is not, then you're going to continuously keep seeing a revolving door.
Yep.
So making sure that, you know, you are having those conversations with your HR business partner. Here at Womply, I have a great partner, Claudia Reese, and her and I immediately started working together in regards to how to create a great employee experience at Womply to ensure that, you know, we're addressing all avenues of growth for our employees as we bring in talent. You know, what is their future at Womply and how can we provide them with the career opportunities to continue to grow with us so that they don't have to look elsewhere?
I love that you focus on that because it's always struck me that it cannot be the end of recruitment once someone accepts an offer.
No.
Right? Like, no. If they leave, then that's a metric you would track, right? That comes back to recruitment if you can't retain people. So I always wondered what exactly is the extent of that role. And so it sounds like partnering with HR, of course, but how involved then are you in making sure that onboarding process and that retention takes place?
So we call it people ops at Womply. We're all part of people ops. There is learning and development, there is talent acquisition, and there is HR. And the three of us report to the president. And we have weekly meetings where we are tracking what each of us are doing and that we're in lockstep to ensure that the candidate experience from beginning to end is good.
Right.
We also do culture amps every quarter. And it is the responsibility of all the managers to ensure that they review those results with their team and pick one to two areas to make an impact and to raise the standards in those areas. So what we found is that when you concentrate on doable tasks where they have impact, the employees become more engaged. That's how we have decided to approach it at Wamply, and I think it's very successful. Over the last 5 months, I've seen employee engagement raise. I've seen more satisfaction. The X team is more involved. So I'm looking forward to what the results will be in a few months.
Yeah, definitely. What are some examples of those areas teams identified that they wanted to focus on in terms of learning and development or just general employee happiness?
So we're pretty young. You know, we're only about 220 people. I was hired at the same time as the director of learning and development. So we've come in and we're still building out our plans for how that looks like. So stay tuned. Maybe I'll come back later and share more with you in regards to that.
I love that. Yeah. So you mentioned you come in, your advice is learn, understand, turn your flashlight app on your phone and just put it everywhere you can and just try and soak in as much information. How did you decide what to tackle first?
Gosh, there was so much to uncover. And, you know, like I said, when you come in, your first reaction is like, oh, why are they doing this? Why are they doing that? I really decided to look at it from the person that had put the processes in place. Like, what was the pain that they were trying to solve for? If you go in there and not assume and really seek to understand the pain points of certain processes that were created, then you can see, okay, is this something relevant for me to continue or does it need to be changed? For me, when I went to Wamply, on my onboarding, I had a great onboarding week. I flew out to Utah and got to meet all of the senior leadership team and have dinner with them and really listen to what their pain points were. It was clear from the onset that sales needed help. And the VP of sales and I spent a good amount of time during my first week together, really mapping out what his pain points were. And I would have liked to wait a little bit longer to understand the company more before I made any changes. But as you know, in a startup world, change and fast pace is the way to go.
Yep.
And you have to be comfortable making quick decisions and changing things. So you're building the plane as you're flying it, right?
Right.
So Mark shared with me that they had a high attrition rate. You know, out of the people that they were hiring, they had low show up rates. And, you know, he wanted to make sure that his team was productive. And he had done a lot of calculation in regards to how much it was costing the company money by having these people that would go through training not make it past a month or two.
Right.
And from the cost of recruitment to onboarding to training to loss of revenue to burning leads. And it was apparent that, you know, that's the place that I needed to concentrate on. So while I was in Lehigh, I decided to start interviewing some of the high performers and some of the low performers in the sales organization and to really build out the true profile of a successful sales rep for Wamply. It's different in every organization.
Sure.
So we decided to go ahead and identify the top 5% performers, 10% and 25%, because you can't always hire, you know, the best of the best of the best. I know
right.
we all want to do that, and that's our goal. But those that sell, they're in the top 10 or top 25 are still doing a good job.
Yeah.
And we should not overlook them. So we build out, you know, I set interview time aside to meet with three of them each as a panel and sought to understand what makes them successful in their own opinion. And really, you know, looked at their profiles, their resumes, and started with my team to build that out. Again, you have to rely on your team. Your team is the one that's in the trenches, and they have to be bought into the process in order for it to be successful. If you are a talent leader and you go in and you say, well, this is how it's going to be done, and they're not bought into your vision, then they're not going to execute it.
Right, right.
So getting that buy-in right off the bat when you're brand new, it's kind of hard because they're used to doing things the same way and they don't understand why you're now coming in after only 2-3 days and you want to make this huge change.
Right, right.
So really explaining yourself and what that vision is and including them in it.
Yes.
So,
and in your case, it was starting with those numbers, right? The attrition mm-hmm. rate, the low retention numbers, and then having them be part of the process and saying, this is why you've been successful. We want to find more people like
exactly.
you.
Exactly. And also, like, you know, you don't want to go in there and make the recruitment team feel like they've failed. It's not that they've failed. It's like if you don't know what the ideal profile is, then you can't identify it.
Right.
And that was my point with my team, is that let's together figure this out, because I'm brand new. You guys can guide me. And they did. They did a fantastic job. They identified the top performers for me that first week. We sat in a room. We interviewed them. Found out, you know, when they missed their goals, what do they do? And it quickly became apparent that there was a pattern. You know, these AEs were very competitive. You know, they not only competed with others, but they competed with themselves,
sure.
Which is what you want. You don't want a sales rep that says, okay, you know, my goal is 10. I've hit 10 and I'm happy with
it. Yeah,
The ideal sales rep is the person that says, this week I hit 10. That was my goal. Next week I want to hit 15 and, you know, crush it. And then the week after that, I want to do 20.
Yeah.
And it's not just motivated by money, even though money is a great motivator, but also with breaking their own records. If you look at sports stars like LeBron James, you know,
sure.
I'm a huge Cavs fan.
Yeah.
He's never satisfied with his status quo. He will always break his own records and other people's records.
Right.
So that's the kind of people you want.
Intrinsic motivation.
Exactly.
Right? The desire to perform and do well and take pride in your work, as opposed to extrinsic, more money.
Exactly. So we did that interview, and we built out the profile of the successful AE. But we also needed to understand what makes someone not successful at Wamply. So we identified some of the low performers, and we interviewed them as well. And it became apparent, you know, once the set of interviews were over, I asked my team to identify why one set was successful and one was not. And it was apparent that the successful AEs took everything on themselves. They believed that they were the drivers of their destiny.
Right.
Whereas the non-performers always blamed someone else. It's the leads are not good. The, you know, my hours, it's, you know, I get distracted. And it was like one excuse after another, whereas with the top performer, it was like, you know, if I fail, I go for a walk around the block and I come back and I raise my goal to make sure that whatever I missed in the last hour, I make up for in the next hour. So based on that, we build out the profile, we build out the core competencies of the role. And then you have to train the people that are interviewing. What I realized was that everyone was going into the interview and just talking to the candidates and deciding whether they liked them or not. And we build out an interview training deck for them. And the following week, I flew back to Lehigh with my team. We trained everyone. And then we did shadowing with them based on behavioral questions. You know, like when you interview, you don't interview just asking questions. You tie it back to what you're trying to figure out about the candidate, right? So behavioral questions is the best way. It's the best indicator of what this person is capable of. Their past will showcase what they can do in the future. So we drafted a list of behavioral questions that were tied back to the to the core competencies. And we sat through interview with them and gave them pointers on how to ask these questions, how to dig in deeper with follow-up questions, and to really understand whether this candidate can perform. Because ideally, you want to hire people in a role that they can be successful. And putting them in a role that they won't be is not going to make them happy. And at the end of the day, who wants to go home and feel like a failure?
Right, of course.
Right?
That's really thoughtful for you to suss out that a nuanced difference in performance, which was the taking responsibility for your successes and your failures. And so then that's something you, as part of that interview training, you probably baked in, right? Is like, here's Absolutely. How to assess for this quality.
Correct. It was a list of questions that we shared with the hiring managers and build out the scorecards based on that, so that it is the same for every candidate, one, so that you can sort of look at all candidates and say, okay, you know, Kathy scored high in this area and she'll be successful because of this reason, versus, oh, we're going to pass on Jane because she wasn't able to answer this successfully. So it wasn't just metrics driven, like, you know, were you able to meet your sales goal? But tell me about a time where you failed at something. And how did you motivate yourself? Tell me about a time where something was out of your control, and how did you deal with that? What did you learn from it? You want to check people's emotional IQ, right? And can they look at themselves and take responsibility for their actions and then learn from that so that they don't do the same action later and expect a different result? And then once you have that checkpoint, you can make a decision of whether they are the right hire for your company.
Yeah, absolutely. As you were conducting these interviews to kind of get your true north on what was a core competency, what made different people in the sales organization successful versus not, you said you want to interview top 5, 10, 25%. Mm-hmm. But then you're also looking at the other side of that bell curve, right?
Yep, the bottom.
Is that an uncomfortable position? Because it's easy to ask someone, why are you successful? You can't go into that room and be like, why are you not successful?
So we ask the same questions. Okay. Of both the top performers and the bottom performers. But their answers were different.
Right.
So you and nobody in the, walking into that room thought they were top or bottom.
Okay.
The way we framed it was that I am a new talent advisor here at Wamply. I am trying to get to understand what each of them are doing. And they've been selected to be part of a sample interview for me to understand their roles to be able to build out the talent map. So from that perspective, we asked the same questions. It was in the answers that you saw the difference.
Okay, right. It's obvious now that you say it. Like, you don't say, you're one of the top 5%, and that's why we brought you in here today, right? Like, it's kind of like a flat sort of like a general assessment.
We're exactly. It's like you've been selected to be part of our study. You know, I'm the new talent advisor here at Wamply. I'm trying to get to understand everyone and their roles. And we thought this would be the best way for me to get to know the sales organization. You know, we've selected 12 of you and we're going to interview you. And it was like done in threes so that not one person felt that they were being put on a hot seat. And we
right.
went and asked the same questions out of all of them.
Right, right. And then there's probably more. Once you get three people talking, right, especially mm-hmm. salespeople, right, they're probably going to be a little more forthcoming than if they feel like they're in the hot seat, like you say.
Exactly. It was just, you know, it was interesting. Even in body language, it was different. You know, the top performers would not sit. They were, like, engaged. They were leaning forward. They were
right.
standing up. They were walking around. They were animated.
Yep.
Whereas the bottom performers, you know, would come in and just slump in their seat, like, oh, woes be me.
Yeah.
Our product is such a great product that I feel anyone that is half engaged can really truly sell it. It is a great product where it helps all the small businesses across the country really manage their business, their front office. So if you can't sell that, it's like, you know, it's the
right.
easiest
what are you doing?
Sales
yeah.
job,
yeah,
in
yeah,
my
yeah.
opinion. The product almost sells itself.
Sure. Know? So how then did you measure the success of this sales hiring revamp?
Great. Great question. The VP of sales has these metrics that he manages all of his sales team on. So what I wanted to do is to really compare apples to apples, right? This new process versus the old process. The old process, about 90% of people that made it to on-site got an offer. And, you know, being in talent, you know that that's a really high number. Either you're doing, like, such an amazing job or your bar is – you're not filtering out as much as you should be. That was one indication. Like, let's look at the funnel. You know, how many of the phone screens are making it to an offer? Let's look at closed calls per hour. Is one of the metrics of, you know, how many calls are these salespeople making and how many of them are confirmed calls and how much do they close. So we looked back, we locked in the last 3 months of the hires against the next 3 months of hires.
Gotcha, okay.
Attendance, you know, what percentage of the hires that we made actually showed up on the first day.
Uh-huh.
You know, one of the things was that when I would report out, and still I get the VP pushed back on this, like, not how many people signed the offer and committed, but how many showed up.
Yeah.
And I keep telling them, every class in the last four or five classes, it's been 100% attendance.
That's great, yeah.
You know, we put in a process to make sure that even though we're having them sign the offer or confirm, that we call them the Friday before.
Right, right.
To ensure that they're going to show up on Monday. Out of that, you know, what are these AE's attendance? You know, how much time are they missing? Do they show up on time? How many calls per hour do they make? How many confirmed calls? What are their sales numbers? So taking that stat versus the new stat, we've seen a good change in the right direction. And again, you know, your interview process is always evolving. It's not, like I said to Mark, I said, it's not a silver bullet. It's not one and done. What we're going to do is, now that we've had a good 4 months of this, we're going to go back, and data comes into this. You have to have clean record, clean data. And I always tell my team that, garbage in, garbage out.
Yep.
If we don't have the data, we don't know whether what we're doing is working. And this is just version one of our interview process. I had just gotten here. So based on the limited knowledge I had, I quickly put something together. And we've seen it pan out. But there's always room for improvement, right? So now is the time for us to go back and look at the scorecards and look at the people that didn't work out and sort of do a postmortem. Okay, so we had 10 people drop out of these last 50. Why? What happened? Right. Why didn't they make it? And do exit interviews. Because again, talent is the beginning, one piece of the puzzle. Then you've got learning and development, where they are being trained on how to sell the product. Then you have the management piece, which falls under the sales leadership. If we hire the best of the best, but they're not trained well, they're not going to last. If we hire the best of the best, they're trained well, but they're not managed well, they're not going to last. So all three pieces have to work well together. And we have to showcase that through data. You know, what percentage dropped out in the first month? What percentage dropped out after? What were their reasons? And go out and ask the employee after they've left, what made you decide to leave? If they were regretted or non-regretted one.
Right, right.
If they were non-regretted, you know, what did we learn from this hire?
Yes.
How could, what did we miss?
Opportunity to revisit the interview process, like you said.
So you go back and you see if it's the same person giving a strong yes to every candidate. Obviously, you need to have a conversation of like, why? What do you see in these people that makes you want to hire them?
Right.
And maybe we need to put in more filter for you.
Right, right. Or more training or whatever.
More training. Yeah. Exactly. Because if they're not making the right call, it's not that they're doing it intentionally. They just need to be trained better.
Yeah, absolutely.
So now we're at that point of our crossroads. And we'll continue our process to make it better and better as we continue.
Yeah, absolutely. Really interesting, too, that when you say coming or assessing it via metrics, of course, but not just recruiting metrics, right? You're looking more down funnel in terms of the employee lifecycle and saying, exactly. These are not just our close rates or our accepted offer to attendance rates, but getting actual sales metrics or whatever department it is. That seems like a more holistic and more, like a more explicit business case when, mm-hmm. as you as a talent leader go to explain the difference that you've made, right? Mm-hmm. You're like, this is not just the performance of my team, right? Here is the performance of other teams, right? That hinges on a good hiring process, right?
Exactly.
So you can kind of speak to your contribution to the organization at large as opposed to your team's own performance.
Correct, correct. I mean, there's different philosophies on where talent ends and HR begins and where training begins. My thought, you know, and I've shared this with my colleagues, and there are people that say, no, it's talent, you know? You need to take ownership. And I say, well, if we bring in the best of the best, but the hiring manager isn't treating them well, how is that recruitment?
Right.
You know, we brought the talent. They've passed the tests that we have instilled, that they've gone through the training. They've, you know, passed the sales training. Now they now they're handed off to the hiring manager. And what they do with them is what will make them successful, right?
Right.
What support they give them, how they give them opportunities for growth and mentor them. So if we see that we have attrition at that rate, then it is my job to partner with my HR business partner and say, here's what we're finding out in exit interviews of these people that are leaving, is that they're not happy because of this reason. And we need to provide training on this side of the fence to help our managers be more successful in retaining their talent.
Right. And not just for the sake of retention, but for the sake of you being able to sleep at night too,
yes, right?
Like,
right?
How can you talk to a candidate and get them excited about the role with a straight face if you know that you're might be putting them into a situation where they're not given the best opportunity to succeed?
Exactly. And it's not good for the company. You know, one of our core values is act like an owner. When you join a startup, it's with the dream that it's going to go big, right? So the way I look at it, that every dollar that's misspent is my dollar.
Yeah.
And if everyone looks at the company metrics that way, that what I'm doing is affecting the business. And every time I don't make the right decision by the company, by the people here, I am costing my own future. So acting like an owner means that even if it's not in my realm of responsibility, but I see a problem, I need to address it as a leader. And I need to go to that leader and say, hey, I've noticed these are some of the issues. How can I support you in fixing this? What can we do together to fix this problem? And that's what excites me about Womply, is that we all act like owners. We don't say, well, this is not my world, this is Kathy's world, you go fix it.
Right, right. Yeah, really interesting. You said that I'm always fascinated in this question of where recruiting ends, where other hiring managers begin. Like, what is the true scope of talent? And the more that I talk about it, or the more I listen to other people talk about it, the more far-reaching it becomes. Because as you say, if this process is broken down the line, then it doesn't matter how many people you hire, how good, how quality the candidate is, they're going to run into a wall. Yeah. And then you're right back where you started.
Well, our philosophy is that people are our asset. You can have the best product in the world, but if you don't have the right people in place, you're going to fail.
Sure.
So take care of your people. Take care of your people. Have them be loyal. Have them want to succeed and provide them with an opportunity to succeed, and your company will succeed. So it's simple to me, and I think we're doing a good job of it.
Yeah, sounds like it. Taking care of your people, seamless segue. I want to hear about how you take care of your people specifically, because you're building out your recruiting team right now as well. What's the makeup of your team currently?
When I joined, I had four recruiters, one in Portland, one in San Francisco, and two in Lehigh, and a recruiting coordinator / office admin in San Francisco. We changed that model. I moved a lot of the positions. I had one attrition here in San Francisco. He moved on to go work with one of his old bosses. We wished him well. He was super excited to work in an area that he hadn't worked before. We lost our RC. She had some personal family issues that she decided to leave. So it was a great opportunity for me to really look at the organization as a whole and see, you know, where do I need coverage and how to best approach this. We had a tech recruiter, a corporate recruiter, and two sales recruiters. And they were all siloed in their own worlds.
Right.
So with this new this new model, I put together a plan and presented it to Corey, our president. And I said, look, I want the team to have the opportunity for growth. And I am envisioning this being an RC, sourcer, junior recruiter, and then utility recruiters.
Okay.
As we are going to continue to grow, I can't have a recruiter on my team that cannot do tech.
Right.
Or a recruiter that only wants to do tech, or one that cannot do anything but sales. I need to be able to move my chess pieces around to serve the business's overall need. And with the next three hires, I want to hire all utility players, people that can do tech, sales, or corp, and be happy doing all three. And I want to bring in two sourcers to provide, and my recruiters will be senior. My sourcers will both be able to do tech and corp, to provide the senior recruiters more opportunity to be on the phone, selling the company, interviewing candidates, and really doing more of the heavy lifting up front for the hiring manager, so the hiring manager can go do their day job.
Right.
You know, recruitment and making sure that we're only putting forward qualified candidates is what our job is in talent. What I don't like, excuse me, is that recruiters nowadays tend to throw paper at hiring managers. And as a first and foremost recruiter, I consider myself first a recruiter.
Is that right.
Our job is to make their life easier. We should be looking at the resumes and being their eyes and looking at it as they would and say, okay, this person is good. Let me now screen them. And if I were the hiring manager, what would be the questions I would ask? And qualify the candidates and only put forward the best. And from there, be the ambassador for the candidate experience, making sure that every step of the way, you're making sure this is the right fit for them as well. A lot of times companies approach interviews like, we're going to interview you to see if you're the right fit for us. But that candidate is interviewing you as well. If you forget that piece of the puzzle, you're going to lose.
Yeah.
So make sure that you're creating an environment where the candidate feels that they are also interviewing you and they're getting the signals they need to make the decision ultimately that's you to take that job with. Changing that was really helpful. And the team has come together nicely. You know, in the last, I won't lie to you, it was bumpy for a little while because a lot of change in a short amount of time makes your recruiters antsy. Like, you know, am I performing? Is she bringing in all these people to replace me? What is she thinking of? Communicating and really being vulnerable and really sharing your thought process, I think, is important, and building that trust. I think the first month or two was really hard for them as a team and myself as their leader. But I kept saying, this is an open door policy. This is a decision we're making together.
Right.
I want you to understand that I'm bringing these people to provide coverage. When you need help, they'll be here to help you. And you'll be part of the solution. And bringing them continuously back into the conversation, even though they were like, what is going on here? How is my world changing? And I think now that we've been together now as a team a good 2 months, they're now like, wow, this is really working. We're seeing that rhythm that everyone's helping each other out. And it's one team, one voice. If sales is behind, you know, the corp recruiter's like, what can we do? How can we get on the phones and help them meet their goals? So from that perspective, I think they're meshing really well.
How did that smoothing out go? You said it was a little touch and go for a minute. How did you manage to iron things out so that they could perform at their key potential?
We believe in radical candor. And one of the reasons why I chose Womply over the two other offers that I had at the time was that I really enjoyed my meeting with the founder and the president, Corey and Toby. And their whole philosophy, like, you know, say it as it is. Don't hold back. Provide feedback in real time. And sometimes it's tough. Sometimes it's really tough. I mean, and I've been on the receiving end of it. And I've gone home and said, okay, you know, I do need to look at this. They have a point. Could I have done something differently here to get better results? And ultimately, I think it's made me a better leader. Same thing with my team. You know, they've provided me with feedback that it was like, you know,
right.
But they were right. You know, hey, Kathy, you're making a lot of changes and sometimes this is not clear to us. Can you take a moment and pause and explain to us? And I've done that. And I've shared this with them that I am human as well. And I make mistakes. And if you don't share those mistakes with me, how am I going to get better?
Right.
So please don't think this is a one-way learning opportunity. I have a lot still to learn in my career. And I look to you guys to be transparent with me. So now, as of 2 weeks ago, we started this, like, what is the one thing I do well? What is the one thing I should improve upon? And it's both ways. So in my one-on-ones, they give me that. And in my one-on-ones, I give them that. Here's what you're doing well. Please continue to do. Here's an area that you need to improve. What about me? Tell me. And together, that has opened up a sense of camaraderie, and that, hey, Kathy's open to feedback. And then acting on that, not just listening to it and saying, well, you know, that was a good nice exercise. Yeah, Thanks for sharing. But really making an effort to change.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's how we grow as a organization together.
I love that. At this juncture, I would normally stumble through a conclusion, but there's no way that I'm going to sum things up as articulately as you did this last half hour. So I don't know. We're creeping up on optimal podcast length, and I feel like I could keep listening to you all day, but we have lives to live and inboxes to service and all that thank good stuff. You. So at this point, I would just say thank you so much, Kathy, for joining us. This has been a pleasure. You made it really easy for me, which is great.
Thank you, Rob. Thank you for having me.
And to all you out there in podcast land, that just about does it for us. I've been Rob Stevenson. Kathy Rosvin's been Kathy Rosvin. You've all been amazing, talented, wonderful recruiters. Have a spectacular week and happy hunting. Talk Talent to Me is brought to you by Hired, a double opt-in global marketplace connecting the best fit active talent to the most exciting recruiting organizations. If you'd like to learn more about how we can help you find your next great hire, head to hired.com/employers and we'll get started.